Welcome to Stone Cold Stros. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. You can follow them on X at Polillo and at JoshJordan975. And in between episodes of our show here, you can read their blogs covering all things Houston sports over on our flagship website, sportsmap.com. On today's episode, it seems like the Astros need a bestie to tell them he's just not that into you. One member of the Astros front office is giving strong silent type vibes, but emphasis on the silent. Can Houston hit the ground running to start the season? We'll check our schedule. And will baseball's challenge system finally provide an adequate check for bad calls and big moments? Gents, over the weekend, we got more reporting that the Astros had rekindled trade talks for Nolan Arenado. The Athletic painted it in a much less exciting, matter-of-fact light. Basically, the Astros checked in again and got the same answer. This is another example of why you have to really read beyond the headlines, because there's really not that much of a story here, but there are some implications. Charlie, what are those to you?
Well, Zach DeCenzo, John Singleton, two guys to be very excited to hear. Yeah, there's really nothing happening with Arenado, because the acquisition would doom one, if not both of those guys, from making the Astros 26-man roster. Obviously, Arenado would be your third baseman. Paredes goes to second base, where defensively he would project to be Altuve-esque, meaning not very good, because I think they would probably decide that Paredes would be worse in left field with Altuve at second base than vice versa. One could argue the merits of that, but it all seems to be a moot point. I guess the Astros probably said to the Cardinals, hey, you know, if you're so desperate to get rid of him, if you'll now pay all but, say, $1 million, perhaps there's a deal to be made. But Arenado, of course, could block it. The Cardinals appear to be going nowhere. If he's not sold on the Astros any longer being a superpower, well, he'd be right about that. But the Astros certainly are in a better place heading into American League West play this year than the Cardinals would seem to be in the National League Central. But the few guys who have no trade clauses have them for a reason. So if Arenado wants to play it, it's his card.
My takeaway is, what the hell is Dana Brown doing? Why do you want this guy? He is declining. When a player shows you they are reclining, believe them. I remember Charlie brought up when we were talking about this a while back ago that, you know, Jose Abreu had more extra base hits than him in 2023 than Arenado had last year. And then that made me want to do a little more digging. In the 132 games that Dubon played in 2023, because Altuve was hurt, he had 39 extra base hits. Last year, Arenado, 39 extra base hits. And then you talk about the salary there. According to McTaggart's article on MLB.com, the Cardinals are willing to pay it down to where it'll be about roughly $40 to $45 million over 3 years for the Astros. That's like $15 million a year. And you're committing to his age 34, 35, and 36 seasons. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know why they're this interested. What are you doing? You have guys on the roster that can give you what he's given you. The only thing you worry about, is he going to have some kind of bounce back year? And then we got a quote from the Cardinals president of baseball operations in that same article, John Mozeliak. And here's what he says. We think about resetting the roster. He does make us a better team, Arenado. And if he's happy, he said, I think that he does seem to be motivated to want to be good. I can candidly say all the trade conversations I've been in, I've been worried about a bounce back year from him the most. That's more red flags. And if he's happy, I think that he does seem to be motivated. So this dude is in decline. He's not any better than you have guys that you already have on your roster. He costs a ton of money. He's going to push you over the CBT. You're going to go over the CBT for this guy? He doesn't want to be here. And you have people with the Cardinals saying like, oh, if he's happy. So he kind of sounds like a head case to me. He's already turned you down twice. So clearly he doesn't really want to be here. I'm just, what happened to the Astros? You saw what happened with Jose Abreu. This seems like Abreu 2.0. I'm just, what happened to their analytics department? I can't imagine why Dana Brown is still doing this.
We litigated this pretty thoroughly in December, and the verdict was clear. What are you doing? And whether they were saved from themselves by Arenado blocking and the Astros moving on, the Tucker trade to get Paredes, dropping $20 million per on Christian Walker. Arenado's glove is still good. Not at the 10 gold gloves in a row level when he was with the Rockies and initially with the Cardinals, but he would upgrade the Astros' infield defense. But the bat, I mean, we have covered it. And, oh, by the way, you would then be pigeonholing Cam Smith as a corner outfield prospect. Walker, 3 years at first base. You'd be taking on 3 years of Arenado at third base. You'd also be blocking Bryce Matthews if he is to evolve into a major leaguer from moving over to third base or second base if he's not supplanting Jeremy Peña at shortstop, right? Paredes under control for another 3 years. Arenado, 3 years. So very curious. It's like going to the mall and seeing something marked down 60%. Well, I'm getting a great deal. Sometimes it's marked down 60% for very good reasons.
We see this in fantasy football all the time, where people, they start ignoring the stats and they just look at the big name. Oh, that guy, he's been to the Pro Bowl five times. Or, oh, wow, Arenado's been an all-star this many times. He's not that anymore. You're just in love with the name on the back of that jersey. Here we go. Last year, posted career worst marks in slugging, barrel rate, hard hit rate, and he ranked below in bat speed. He was below average in bat speed, too. So all the evidence is right there. This is not the move, guys. Just be glad that Arenado is saving you from yourself.
Someone in the Astros offices needs to sneak around to all the desks and any unearthed Nolan Arenado baseball cards, burn them immediately.
It's funny. I helped my brother move over the weekend. And it's one of those things where you find a lot of stuff in the garage that's unused. But he goes, oh, I got that for a really good deal. Oh, I got this for free. And it just sits in the garage. There's a reason why you got those things for free or at steep discount. This seems really a solution that cures anything that ails you, because right now this team is in desperate need of an offensive bat. He makes you better defensively on the infield, but then you push Paredes to an unnatural position at second. Altuve's already in a new position out in left field. So it seems like it creates more domino effect of people that are in off positions to upgrade your defense, but you're not getting any better offensively. And seemingly you are saddling yourself to a guy who could be really financially detrimental to your budget, dependent upon how much St. Louis is willing to eat on that deal. I don't know at what cost. Well, let me ask you guys that. Is there a number that you take on Arenado and all this risk for?
If I am accepting that 2026 and 2027 may just be millions lit on fire, if the Cardinals would pay it down to $7 million per year, I mean, this would be an odd guy given the whole tenor of the Astros offseason. You're going to vault into paying the tax for Nolan Arenado at this point and pay the repeater tax. But whatever you're burning 2026, 2027, if he turns out to be washed up, you can't let that influence other roster decisions going forward. And oopsie, the way the extreme sunk cost of Abreu and Montero, can add McCullers into there. Obviously hurt the Astros' cause of building out their roster for 2025. I mean, look, if he was in the last year of his contract and you wanted to take a flyer, I'd be fine with that. But multi-year, the trickle-down ramifications of who you're blocking potentially, this is not 2017 Nolan Arenado. He was a league-average guy. You don't pay $15 million for a league average guy when the needle is trending in the wrong direction.
That makes zero sense to me. Anything that pushes them over the CBT for him, I am out on. That makes zero sense. And to know that you're going to have him on the books through his age 36 season, we just went through this. Learn a lesson. But get this. He's pull happy, guys. Where have we heard this before? I pulled it up. All his homers last year, and I think he only had 16 of them, something like that. All of them, left center or to left. So nothing to that side of center field does he ever crank the ball out. So I think once again, they're trying to capitalize on, oh, we can turn him into a home run monster if he's at Minute Maid Park. But when has that ever really worked?
Was it FDR? Was it JFK? Was it Yogi Berra? Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
Speaking of front office moves, Jim Crane pulled one over the weekend that we call the Irish dip. Chandler Rome noting that following his inning-long stint in the radio booth, the Astros owner declined a follow-up interview request with the three beat writers that were on site in West Palm Beach. Now, we've noticed, and actually talked about it here on this show, we've noticed in recent years how Jim Crane has opted to put Dana Brown and Jeff Bagwell in front of the cameras instead of himself, outside of the occasional appearance like Dusty's farewell presser. Do you think it's just a coincidence that once Houston went from tough contenders to tough decisions, that Jim Crane's decreased his public visibility?
I do not. At most, this is a misdemeanor, not a felony. I think it's not necessarily small, not necessarily petty, but after suckling at the teat of your employees, and I know Space City technically pays the broadcasters, but obviously they're only there with the Astros' blessing. It wasn't going to be an inquisition from the beat guys to get a quote post Bregman. I guess they could have provided the transcript. Well, here's what I said about it on the radio or on the TV. You could just run with that. An owner doesn't need to be available to the media all the time, but very early in spring training, a couple of availabilities, because he certainly was chatty Cathy and ready to field all the questions all the media members may have had when it was about the new naming rights sponsor.
Yeah, he seemed pretty excited about that. I mean, just watching that interview, I saw a lot of comments on X, on Twitter, like, oh, Crane up there mumbling again. And if you watch, he was so laid back, like with his posture, just sitting there, just kind of didn't look super excited to be there, looked pretty bored, if you ask me. So I'm sure he's like, I answered all the questions people wanted me to answer on the broadcast. If Chandler Rome or whoever these other beat reporters are, Brian McTaggart, if they want my thoughts on these things, they can pull my quotes from the broadcast. I don't feel like I need to go do this again. So he's the owner. He's going to do whatever he wants.
Maybe you had a tea time to get to down the road there. Just a quick message. If you're interested in advertising your service or product on our podcast, you can contact our friends on the sales team at houston.sportsmap.com/advertise. The link, as always, is in our description. We also got news that Taylor Trammell suffered what Joe Espada called a pretty significant calf strain running the bases. It does not sound good for him. He's the left-handed outfielder that Houston acquired from New York. We wish him a speedy recovery. Moving on to our next topic here. As we're aware, the Astros can get off to slow starts. They pushed the limit of survivable slow starts last season. As we look at the front end of their 2025 season schedule, do you think, Charlie, we'll start with you, do you think they have an opportunity to pace well, or do you think there's potential for them to get off to another slow start, especially considering all the moving parts of players new to the team and established players in new positions?
The insufficient answer is yes. Either is a possibility. Look, they can get off to a lousy start and be off to a better start than they were in 2024. 7-19, 12-24. The schedule cuts favorably. As long as the starting pitching is built up, that is the core of what makes this Astros team still a contender in 2025. Absolutely so in the American League West. They open with the Mets. Among the Astros' first six series, the Mets are the only opponent that was a better team than the Astros last year. Now, obviously, everybody's 2025 performance isn't going to map to their 2024 performance. I sure hope Justin Verlander is the Giants' fourth or fifth starter, because then he'll pitch at Daikin Park, the second series of the season. But the Astros, after facing the Mets, it's the Giants at Minnesota, at Seattle, home for the Angels, at St. Louis. Not a playoff team in the bunch among those five after the Mets, before a fun series with the Padres coming to Daikin Park. By the way, do you know both Martin Maldonado and Yuli Gurriel are trying to make the Padres in spring training? Marwin Gonzalez and Colin McHugh must be saying, get me the Padres number. Why not me? Brian McCann. Hey, I can catch a little bit. But wouldn't that be something if Maldonado and or Yuli are here with the Padres in late April? But hey, five soft-ish opponents out of your first six gives the Astros a chance to get off to a very good start.
For me, it's less about the opponents and what tripped them up last year. So I went back. I just looked at that first Yankee series where they got swept, trying to see any common themes here. And there are quite a few that they persisted for the entire season. Astros scoring a few runs early and then never being able to score for the rest of the game. We saw that a lot. You know, they scored four runs in the first two innings of that first game of the season last year, didn't score again. Same thing in every single one of those games. And the other thing that really caught my attention was the bullpen. The actual starting pitching was pretty good. Even in that game, the second game of the season, they got blown out 7-1. Christian Javier pitched six scoreless innings in that game. But Taylor Scott came in, Mushinski came in, got blown up. That's why they lost that one. Now look at game three. Abreu and Presley came in and gave up four runs in the seventh and eighth innings. Yankees even had three errors in that game, and the Astros still managed to lose. But it goes to show you, bullpen giving up runs late, Astros' inability to score late. And then that final game where they got swept, they got one run in the third and two in the sixth. J.P. France didn't pitch good, but he wasn't bad. What really killed you was a tie game, remember, and Hader came in. And then Torres steals second base, or Hader's not even paying attention. He just steals second base, no problem. Then, boom, Soto just little base hit to left field. They take the lead. Then the Astros actually got some traffic on the base pass in the bottom of the ninth. They got a little unlucky. Yordan almost had a double. There was just a little in foul territory, and then they lose the game. So is that going to be a thing? Because the bullpen's probably going to be a little bit weaker. And, you know, I know it's just spring training, but I did notice the Astros kind of look like they did last year. Jake Myers comes up, strikes out on three pitches. Dubon and Chas McCormick both swing at the first pitch to start the game. Two quick outs. So that is concerning a little bit. Your bullpen's a little bit weaker. And is the offense, they're going to be a little worse. You have to imagine with Bregman and Tucker gone. If they don't get into this new philosophy of taking some more pitches, I think we could be off to another rough start this year.
And let's throw in that Ronel Blanco has no chance of starting as well as he did last year.
Charlie, going back to your thoughts on it's hard to know what a soft series is for this Astros team. I just did a quick exercise as we were prepping for this and looked at the first 11 series of the season, which takes them into the beginning of May. And my best guess have them at five games above 500 through the first 33 games. Now, but what makes it really hard to predict without actually seeing the product on the field yet is in years, we know that even the better Astros teams would play down to their opposition. So it's really hard to say what a soft series is for this team, because now we can't say definitively whether they're playing down versus just being the version of whatever this team is, which only time will tell. Are they better than teams like the Tigers or Royals? I don't know. I mean, they have to go show that on the field. How does Paredes, you know, take to his team? Does Christian Walker get off to a hot start? How does Altuve being challenged to a new position defensively, how does he take that challenge? Is that something that invigorates him on the offensive side? Or is it something where if he suffers some defensive setbacks early, will that get in his head? Does Jeremy Peña finally take a step forward in his career? So there's a lot of question marks. And also we have to be careful of, do we put too much stock in what the early results are? Because how many people overreacted to that slow start last season? One of the more interesting notes from this spring training is that we're getting the first test run of the ABS system with major league players in spring training, also known as robo-umps or the challenge system. The Cliffs notes is that the teams get unlimited challenges up until the second unsuccessful challenge, at which point you can no longer challenge. Challenges can only be initiated by the batter or the catcher. West Palm does not have the system yet, so we're not going to get to see that with Astros games early on. We won't see it in the majors until next season, but how do you guys see this impacting the game in the big picture?
I'm all for it. I don't think it's going to have a substantial impact other than when it's used in the eighth or ninth inning, a key spot where, oh, that's ball four, or, oh, that's strike three, as opposed to how it was called. We are not going to have relentless stoppages. You mentioned catcher, batter, also the pitcher. There is no looking at video in the dugout, no stalling, the manager holding up. Give me time. Hey, what's it look like on the video, fellas? 2 seconds. So basically you have to react right away, and you're going to save those challenges for key spots where you're almost certain, I believe, that you're right. I don't know why it's not in West Palm. It's the only ballpark on the East Coast of Florida where they didn't put the system in. Plus, with the Astros and Nationals sharing it, you get twice the use out of it. So I don't know the reason why it's not at Cacti Park, but this is coming in 2026. And if it changes a couple of egregiously bad ball strike calls per game for each team, hear, hear. Too bad Angel Hernandez is retired.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think this is great. What would bother me really often, especially during the playoffs when, you know, the Astros would go on the road and you'd see some calls that were 3-4 inches off the plate that were clearly balls. And you kind of chalk it up to, oh, well, we're in the Yankees ballpark, so they're going to get the close ones, or, you know, whoever they happen to be playing. At least when this does come to fruition, you can stop some of that stuff. If a pitch is 4 inches off the plate and the umpire gets a little too into it with the crowd going wild, you can challenge it and, you know, turn that out into another opportunity. So I think it'll be great. Honestly, I wish it was starting this season. I think it's unfortunate we have to wait another year, but I'm all for it. Just get it right. And we have the technology. Give players the opportunity to challenge it and turn it the other way. I'm all for it.
And as we discussed, it's a year out, so we'll parse it much more deeply down the line. But the tactics of when you use it, the most frequently miscalled pitches by home plate umpires are when the count is no balls and two strikes. Unless that baby really cuts through the plate, the batter often erroneously gets the benefit of the doubt of a ball one call. Conversely, a 3-0 pitch, years ago it used to be called the all-automatic, it was anywhere remotely close to the strike zone, the umpire is calling that 3-0 pitch a strike. So in the third inning, if you're a leadoff hitter, especially if it's someone toward the bottom of the lineup, has a 3-0 count, and that pitch comes and the umpire calls it a strike, but no, that's a ball. You want to use one of your challenges that early in the game, you better be sure you're right about it, because you definitely want to have one or two in your pocket for the late innings, the critical junctures of the ball game.
Too bad Angel Hernandez is retired is not something that I expected to hear today or ever. I think it's much more of a humbling experience, or potentially could be, for umps, since their calls are going to be adjudicated in real time in front of a live crowd. Now, how will an ump like C.B. Buckner respond to being challenged or getting his calls overturned? How will that impact his demeanor? And a more important question for the broader scope amongst all umps is, how will some overturned strike calls influence their zone when their zone is too far on one side of the plate or the other? Will they be able to adjudicate those calls better, considering they're saying, okay, I'm calling this too far outside, I need to move my visual zone one way or the other? Remains to be seen, but I think, Charlie, I'm with you that any progress in the right direction where we're getting more calls correct without completely grinding the game to a halt is good. And considering how long tennis has had a similar system, it's ridiculous that it's taken this long to take this step forward. Any final thoughts before we're out the door on this episode?
At least the Astros, in terms of the good start, bad start, won't have to worry about Alex Bregman dragging them down in April. And anyone fretting, shaking their head, cussing because Bregman homered and had 3 hits in his Red Sox debut, chill pills by the handful.
Yeah, kind of back to that. What we did see from that early start for the Astros did show itself again in the playoffs against Detroit, where the Astros had trouble scoring runs, especially manufacturing them late. And the bullpen, Ryan Pressly, Hader, getting rocked in that final game. So these things can kind of show themselves early in the year, and that can be what eventually gets you beat when the games matter the most. And as far as the final on the umpire assist stuff, I mean, these are tough jobs, you know, seeing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs on the black and wicked breaking stuff. And a lot of these umpires are older. You know, their eyesight might not be what it used to be. The NFL is moving in this way where you get replay assist. This is just where it's going now. There's nothing wrong with leaning on technology a little bit just to try and get the calls right.
It is a hard job, but they also get a nice salary. So the compensation, I think, should be equitable to the level at which they're performing that job. That's going to be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure you click like on the video. And if you listen on podcasts on apps like Apple or Spotify, please consider giving us a 5-star rating with a nice review. Our next episode will drop Thursday, so make sure you're subscribed to this channel, Sports Map Houston, and our other channel, Sports Map Texans. We drop bonus episodes as news breaks. Thanks for listening. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon, saying so long. And until next time, go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.